Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Scott Mautz, welcome to the conversation today.
Thanks to have me here, John. I'm ready to bring some value to the audience as best as I can.
It is a pleasure to be with you again. You're joining us again, joining us from San Diego area in Southern California. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. Today, we're going to be talking about your new book, The Mentally Strong Leader, Build the Habits to Productively Regulate Your Emotions, Thoughts, and Behaviors. Now, I just want to start by saying I love the title. I think leadership is so important. Of course, it's a core part of what we cover on this podcast. But the mentally strong component to leadership really is a tough ask for a lot of people. And then your subtitle, Build the Habits to Productively Regulate Your Emotions, Thoughts, and Behaviors, very, very key. So we're going to unpack all of this, explore really what's in this book today. We're going to do it briefly, you know, just in about 25 minutes or so. But at the end of the episode, we'll definitely encourage the audience to reach out, to go find the book, which will then, of course, allow you to get into much more detail. As we get started, I wanted to share Scott's bio with everybody. Scott Mautz is a former senior executive of Procter & Gamble, where he successfully ran several of the company's largest multi-billion dollar businesses. Scott is faculty on reserve at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business for Executive Education, and is also a popular course instructor on LinkedIn Learning, where his courses have been taken over 1.5 million times and counting. And my guess is that number's even higher than the last time when we were doing the prep work, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Scott, anything you would like to highlight by way of your background or personal context before we dive on in?
Oh, no, just that, you know, the 3 decades I spent in corporate, I matched that up with being an intense academic study as well, John. I do an awful lot of research for all the books, the workshops that I do, the keynotes that I do, to bring kind of a, so I'm not just some old guy telling war stories from his corporate experience. You know, I have a lot of intense, original academic research to match up with decades of experience.
Wonderful. Excellent. All right. As we get started, I always love to ask authors, why this book? Why now? Like, what was the germination of the idea for this book? Why do you feel it's so important for the world today?
I spent several decades in Procter & Gamble and in other large companies, John, really paying attention to what makes great leaders great. Why do the highest achieving achievers achieve? What's the secret sauce behind that? And study it, not only for, you know, my own good and for wanting to be able to advance my own career, but trying to build this database of knowledge, because I knew that someday I would want to do exactly what I'm doing now, broadening my platform for making a difference with the written and the spoken word, much like you have, John. And in that intense, those decades of study matched up with academic research, I started to figure out that one of the secret sauces to being an incredible leader is this thing called mental strength. And we're going to talk more about it and what data I have that makes me believe that. But it was this desire of what I learned to help a leaders lead and be great that really drove me to share with the world what I'm going to share today.
Excellent. Excellent. So let's dig on in and talk about that mental strength component. Feel free, you can tie into research that you've done, but let's start by just kind of conceptualizing it and laying out really what does that mean to you?
Yeah, mental strength is the ability to regulate your emotions, your thoughts, and your behaviors productively, even in adversity, despite whatever circumstance you find yourself in. As I like to say it, John, it's how you manage internally so that you can lead externally. And here's the thing. I think all of your viewers and listeners, John, and even yourself, we all know intuitively that if you want to be successful in life and at work, you have to be able to regulate your emotions, your thoughts, and your behaviors. That's part of the deal. But here's the news flash. This just in, it's really hard to do that. It's really hard because, oh, I don't know, this thing called human beings. and the world that we live in and how chaotic it is and the pressures we feel every day. But the good news is that by, you know, and the subtitle of the book exists for a reason, because if you can build habits to increase your mental strength, I have found it is like training your brain for achievement. And I'll give you an example. One of the intense pieces of research I've conducted behind understanding mental strength was this. We asked over 3,000 executives a central question. Thinking of the highest achieving organizations you've ever been part of that overcame the most obstacles, what were the attributes of the key leaders in those positions at that time? And John, over 91% of over 3,000 executive respondents described the same profile, a mentally strong leader. And while at the time they didn't know what they were describing leaders that were flexing the six core mental muscles of mental strength, which are, they were describing leaders that had incredible fortitude, confidence, boldness, decision-making, goal focus, the ability to stay focused on your goals and keep your organization focused on their goals, and messaging, the ability as a leader to exude positivity and positive messaging in the way you conduct yourself to the organization, and a quality of your presence and an integrity to your intent. You're sending all the right messages to the organization about how you lead. So we saw over and over again that the highest achieving organizations were led by people with mental strength, which is what leads me to conclude that mental strength is the leadership superpower of today, especially given the chaotic work world that we all have to deal with, John.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just so complex and messy. There's so much nuance. Everything's disrupted. Everything's changing constantly. The name of the game is agile, right? Everyone has to be able to pivot and adjust on a dime, it seems almost. And you have to do all of that with other human beings, and human beings don't like change, and they're resistant to change, and they get nervous, and they have anxiety, and your people have mental health issues and need to be mentally strong as well. And so we talk a lot about, you know, mental wellness in the workplace. We talk a lot about self-care and those sorts of things. I think sometimes what we forget is that, you know, yes, I want my leaders to create a really great positive environment for their teams and for their workforce so that they feel, you know, emotionally supported and psychologically safe, et cetera, et cetera. But our leaders are dealing with even more complexity. They need it too. Like, so if it's important for me to be able to be mentally strong, it's probably even more important for a leader who has the, I mean, it's not an overstatement to say the lives are in this leader's hand of all the people that work for him or her, because, you know, it's not literally life and death in terms of whether you die or live, but it is your livelihood. It is your ability to put food on the table for your family, to have shelter over your head. It is the opportunity to find meaning and purpose in your life through the work that you do. That's a big, big deal. And so leaders, when I talk to leaders, they feel that weight. You know, they want, most leaders want to do right by their people. Most leaders aren't thinking about how am I going to wake up and exploit my people today. They want to do right by their people, but it's hard, and it never leaves. Like, you feel that weight every day, and there's almost no reprieve from it. And so if you're going to be successful as a leader in this day and age, you have to understand how to better regulate your emotions and to deal with the things that are going to be thrown at you constantly. You're going to be dealing with it every single day.
Yeah, and to build on that, John, you're absolutely right. Every single day there is a chance for something to go wrong emotively or with your thoughts and with your actions. Yeah. That's why it's so important. And this is why I spent so much time understanding habit building science and building habit building science into the book, The Mentally Strong Leader, to give the reader the ability to create the actual habits that lead to mental strength and that allow you to increase those six core mental muscles. So, for example, three elements of habit building science built into The Mentally Strong Leader. Number one, I think you know this intuitively, John, but if you want to build a habit at anything, you need repetitions.
Yeah.
What gives you repetitions? Systems and frameworks. That's why the over 50 plus tools that are in The Mentally Strong Leader are all systems and frameworks built, tested, validated, and retested to be proven and give you the repetitions you need to strengthen those mental muscles. Second thing about habit building science, we know that a reason that habits never actually get started and get into formulation, if you will, is that people don't know where to start. So yeah. Each habit and each tool of over 50 tools in the Mentally Strong Leader comes with a section titled Your First Small Step. So you know exactly what to do to start that specific tool and that specific habit to help you build that specific mental muscle. Third point of habit building science built into it. There's a key inflection point in whether or not a habit will stick or not, John. It's what happens in moments of weakness. For example, confidence is one of the big mental muscles that you have to build to be mentally stronger. And I go into depth in that in the Mentally Strong Leader. But let's say you're generally confident, but you have, one of those down days where your boss makes you look like an idiot. You say something dumb in a meeting in front of other people. Somebody else had a brilliant idea and your confidence starts to spiral down. Even though you're generally confident, you're starting to have a moment of weakness. Well, what do you do in those exact moments of weakness? There's a section for every of the 50 tools in the book to help you figure out exactly what to do in those moments when things are kind of spiraling down on you. So it's about building the habits to be able to become mentally stronger. Because you're right, John, we face this challenge every single day in trying to self-regulate ourselves.
Yeah. And again, I believe in the goodness of people. Human beings are messy. We all have our baggage. We're all dealing with stuff. And so it's hard to get up every day and to be your best self with the people around you, even when that's your intention. But I do believe that that is most people's intention. And so then it's a matter of how can we show up for each other to support each other? Right. And like you said, the building those systems to develop the habits is going to be really important for a leader. But also think about how you doing that will provide a great model for your team. So, you know, especially during the pandemic, like we talked about mental health and mental wellness in the workplace before the pandemic, but it got a real spotlight during the pandemic, you know, because people recognized the anxiety and the stress that people were feeling because of pandemic issues and forces. And there was a heightened kind of expectation on leaders during that time to be, you know, to show emotional intelligence, to show empathy and compassion for your people, to be supportive. And I think all of that's wonderful. Like, I want leaders to do that. But how do you do that? It's a hard thing to do. And it has to start with modeling it with yourself. If you can't do it yourself, you're not going to really be able to support your team to be able to do it as well. So one of the byproducts, I think, of what you're describing in your book is not only is it going to be super beneficial to the leader who's learning about these systems to develop the habits to become more mentally strong, but your people notice. They see you and they see how you respond to challenges. They see how you interact with them. And as you grow, you give them permission to grow as well. And you show them a model of how to do that.
That's right. It's as much about self-leadership too, John. And you also see that change in yourself. You know, I debated for the longest time in the title, The Mentally Strong Leader. I didn't want people to take away it's only for leaders in an organizational setting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also for self-leadership and how much stronger we feel about ourselves at life, at work, of course, but also in life when we know we're controlling our emotions in a good way. And I'm not talking about not having emotions. That old adage of check your emotions at the door is baloney. It never works. It's about how to control those emotions productively and your thoughts and your behaviors. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so drawn to this concept of mental strength and trying to bring it to folks on how exactly to become mentally stronger.
Yeah, awesome. And I think I'm just doing some self-reflection here as we're talking. Yeah. And, you know, I think overall, I do a generally good job. I think a lot of people describe me as fairly even keel, someone who can deal with difficult issues in a productive way, et cetera. But there definitely are things that trigger me. We all have those things, right? And there are certain things because of my own background, my own baggage, you know, all the stuff we won't go into. But there's certain things that if they happen a certain way, if I'm not aware of what's going on, those emotions are visceral and they're real and they're immediate. And my reaction in the moment, unless I'm aware of what's happening, is usually not positive. Like, it's usually me overreacting to someone who is well-intentioned, who just stumbled into something that is related to baggage that I have that I'm now projecting something onto them. So like, as I reflect on myself, I'm like, okay, like I know some of these things that have happened over time that have shown up in ways that aren't productive. I know that those things happen. So why do they happen? How can I choose to respond to those emotions as they're happening? It doesn't mean I ignore them. I don't put my head in the sand. I don't pretend. It's not Pollyanna-ish, and I'm not just pretending like everything is great when it's not. But it's recognizing and meeting people where they're at and where you're at in a much more productive way if you have those regulation tools, the emotional regulation tools. At the top of your, you know, the tip of your brain, in your hands when those issues arise, so that hopefully the next time I get triggered that way, I can take a few deep breaths, I can step back, I can remember the person that's standing in front of me, that they're probably not trying to like dagger me in the heart and twist it, and I can be much more productive, and we can have a good dialogue around whatever the issue might be, right?
That's right, John. In that journey that you speak of, there, like, no one would ever expect you, John, to be able to control all your emotions, all your thoughts, all your behaviors all the time. You don't have to work on all six of those core mental muscles to still be mentally strong. The opposite of mentally strong is not mentally weak. We all start with a baseline of mental strength. It's just about knowing which muscle to work on at which time. Just like when you go to the gym. You don't go to the gym every day, all the time, to work on every muscle, right? Maybe Wednesday is back day, Thursday is leg day, Friday is arm day. And with the mentally strong leader, the good news is readers can take a mental strength self-assessment. It's 50 questions that have been validated time and time and time again over years, perfected, so that it can identify what your overall mental strength score is. Then you also get your own score by mental muscle. So how do you score on fortitude, confidence, boldness, decision-making, goal focus, and your ability to message positively to others, to those around you? How do you score on those? Then, knowing that, you can put together your own customized mental strength training program. So this journey and the challenge you were speaking of, John, that you face every single day, it doesn't mean you have to be mentally strong to all people all the time with every muscle. You can build your customized mental strength training program and work on the muscles as you need to over time, as long as you stay in the gym and keep working. Because if you don't go back to the gym ever, you get flabby, right? So you just have to keep working at it over time at your pace.
Yeah, and in my experience, people are pretty generous and forgiving towards people they see that are making an effort. Like, we all know, we're all human, we all have our stuff. And if you respond in a way that, you know, is in the moment that probably isn't productive as it could be, just own it. Like, show a little bit of vulnerability, own it, apologize, try to make it right, and move on. Right. And people will appreciate that. And they'll, in my experience, most people will show you generosity as you're going through that process.
Yes, that's exactly right. I go back to the point again, it's so important for all your listeners to remember the opposite of mentally strong is not mentally weak. We all have a baseline to work from. You just have to have a customized program that's right for you specifically, knowing what you need to work on. And people will be forgiving and work with you along the way, especially if they know that you're trying and that you have a plan to get better and mentally stronger.
Yeah. Maybe in some of the time remaining, we can dig into a couple or a few of the specific habits. Sure. And the mechanisms and structures that talk about in the book, any that you would like to highlight that you think are just like really powerful, that would be a great example for the audience.
Yeah, there's so many to talk about. I'll just pick one off the top of my head. Let's just focus on boldness for just a second. You know, to build a boldness muscle, how do you show up in a way that allows you to really pave a direct pathway to growth? To force yourself and your organization to think out of the box, to take risks. You know, what can you do that? So to introduce one simple tool and a thought, let me just ask you a quick question, John. Have you ever been to the casino before? A casino where you bet and stuff.
I have been in them. I've never really gambled, but yeah, like in Vegas, you walk through to go to the hotel or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. So I had a, casino client once who brought me in for a leadership session that I did for them, leadership workshop and keynote. And they were telling me over dinner about an interesting throughput problem that they were having on the casino floor, meaning that the ratio of people that were standing around and watching a game, this one particular game, to the ratio of people that were stepping up and betting their money on the game was way out of whack. So it was causing an unproductive jam on the floor. Now, would you hazard a guess at what game that might be? If you don't, you know, if you're not in a casino lot, you might not know. But if you had to take a guess, do you have any guess at what that game might be?
Like in the movies, it's craps. Like you see people around the table, right?
And in life, it's craps too that I'm talking about. Excellent guess, excellent guess, John. For those of you that don't know what craps is, it's a game that's in a table. You know, it's kind of sunken. You roll dice. It's a game of chance with dice. And if you look at the felt table, if you've never seen a craps table, go Google it. Craps table. It is overwhelmingly complicated. It is intimidating if you don't know how to play the game. So Vegas found that people weren't stepping up and literally rolling the dice and risking their money. Meanwhile, back at the office, people won't step up and roll the dice either. They won't take smart risks at work and be bold if they don't understand the rules of risk taking. So in the Mentally Strong Leader, I lay out a way that you can define the rules of risk taking for those around you, right? And this particular one is, you know, within a business context. Mentally Strong Leader is for both work and life, but this one's for business context. But you could spell out the rules of risk taking for your organization, or ask your bosses what they are. What does a good risk constitute? What does a bad risk constitute? What happens when I take a risk and fail or succeed? Who needs to approve what level of risk and so on? When you spell out the rules of risk taking, John, people are much more likely to be bold in doing. And I give you a list of 20 specific questions you can ask to help define the rules of risk taking in the Mentally Strong Leader, right? Does that make sense? That's just one of the 50 plus tools
yeah.
to help you build your mental strength.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. And I mean, the flip side of the coin, right? So you want to be more bold. And you're, you know, some people kind of naturally, they probably need to tone back the boldness. but I think a lot of people, probably most people, are the other way. Like they really, that's something they have to grow into, being more comfortable in being more bold. And I like how you have the flip side of the coin there. Like, yeah, let's talk about how we construct a psychologically safe environment where people feel safe to be bold. I mean, one of the reasons why people aren't more bold is because they're worried about looking stupid, or they're worried about making a mistake that will somehow hurt them. And so then they play it safe. And when people are playing it safe, they're not creating, they're not innovating, they're not pushing the envelope, they're not challenging assumptions. They're just kind of going with the flow. They're trying to, like, you know, put their head down and just do their work. And, you know, in some jobs, I guess maybe that's okay, but for most of what we talk about in the knowledge economy, we need people to push the envelope. We need people to challenge us. We need people to come up with new ideas and try them and iterate rapidly. And if you don't have a psychologically safe place, it for most people, it just won't happen. They just won't be willing to risk it, right?
Yes,
and so boldness, absolutely. It's something I can, over time, I can try to, like, have a little bit more courage and boldness in how I approach things. But from a leadership standpoint, from an organizational design standpoint, from a culture standpoint, if you don't focus on the mechanisms of boldness, a lot of people just aren't going to get there. They're not going to feel safe enough to get there.
That's exactly right. You know, speaking of safety, I'll highlight a confidence tool that's related to what you're talking about as well, John. There's a whole bunch of confidence building tools, because confidence is a key mental muscle to build in a Mentally Strong Leader. And when you think about confidence, there's two tools in the book that ask you to do two things, right? The first tool is built on asking you to monitor your relationship with self-doubt, and then monitor your relationship with yourself. Two different tools. I'll explain the first one. Think about those words for a second. The tool, it's called the doubt continuum, and you have to take a look at doubt on a scale from a world where you're perfectly confident all the way to a world where you're suffering from a fear of failure. And in between is kind of healthy self-doubt, if you will. But it's important to remember that confidence is not the absence of doubt. It's the ability to manage and control your relationship with doubt. Because even the most confident people that I came across in my years of research on this, John, they all had some quiet whisper of self-doubt somewhere. The rest of the world may not have seen it, but they had a very different relationship with their doubt than other people that weren't as confident had that. So in the book, you get a chance to to manage all the way from what do you do when you're overconfident in your relationship with self-doubt to where you're caving into a fear of failure. How do you overcome that? The other side of that is, okay, not only do you monitor your relationship with your self-doubt, how do you monitor your relationship with yourself? There's a tool in the book called the self-acceptance scale. And it turns out there's breakdowns in confidence in many variations, all the way from you start out great self-acceptance, wonderful self-acceptance. On the other side of the scale, you have imposter syndrome. And then in between, you have all kinds of breakdowns where you give in to negative inner chatter. You start chasing approval instead of authenticity. You're constantly comparing to others, something I still work on today, and I teach this stuff. You get caught up in, and this is perfect because the words are on your sweatshirt, you get caught up in, I'm not enough. And guess what? I'd like to read your sweatshirt to your audience so that they understand, folks, you are enough. And you don't have to take on everything by yourself, by the way. And the tool goes through the range of ways that we can, in that relationship with ourselves, we drift farther and farther away from self-acceptance. And it can get as bad as imposter syndrome, where we won't accept what we've accomplished in our life. And then it gives you solves for each one of those steps along the way, whether you're, seeking approval too much, comparing to others too much, beating yourself up over and over with negative inner chatter, whether you won't accept that you're enough or that you just feel like an imposter. There's tools for all of that to help you increase your confidence and thus your mental strength.
Yeah, awesome. There's so much here. And we've only really scratched the surface, but that's why it's important for everyone to go check out the book. Before we wrap things up for today, I wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, where they can find your book, and then give us the final word on the topic for today.
Yeah, thanks so much. You can go to scottmautz.com, scottmautz.com. To find out about, find the book, to learn about my keynotes, my workshops, all the things that I do related to the Mentally Strong Leader. And also, I put together a gift for your listeners and viewers today, John. If they go to scottmautz.com/mentallystronggift, they can get a 60-page free download that allows them to take that mental strength self-assessment I was talking about to discern their overall mental strength and score by mental muscle. As well, it provides questions that help you and prompts that help you get the most out of the book, The Mentally Strong Leader. So scottmautz.com/mentallystronggift, you'll get that free 60-page PDF. And in terms of last, parting message, I would just encourage people to remember that the opposite of mentally strong is not mentally weak. We all have a baseline to build from. You absolutely can do that. You could start doing the things that will build your mental muscles, which we have shown correlates precisely to achievement. It's the leadership superpower of our times and self-leadership superpower of our times.
Awesome. Scott, thank you so much. It's just been a real pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Scott can do for you. Check out the book. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.